Hi, I'm Brian McCreath, and this is The Answered Question from WCRB in Boston for January 2nd, 2017. This is a podcast about creativity in the context of music. The voices you hear on each episode are some of the most compelling classical musicians in the world. But for today, it's a little different.
I seen the lights go out on Broadway. I saw the Empire State laid low.
That's Billy Joel and his song Miami 2017, what most people know as Seeing the Lights Go Out on Broadway. Billy Joel isn't a name you usually associate with classical music, but as you'll hear, he's pretty plugged into the history and forms of classical music in a way that really goes beyond using a Beethoven melody for this night. Billy Joel is also a friend of WCRB's Tony Rudell, so we couldn't resist heading into 2017 by hearing from Billy Joel himself about what's behind Miami 2017. Tony got things started by asking Billy about the creative process in general for any song that Billy writes.
I usually start with the music. I'd say 95% of the time I write the music first before I complete a song. For me, the basic language of songs is the music. When I hear a song on the radio, and this goes back to when I was a teenager, I really never got all the words when I was listening. Mostly I heard the melody, I heard the rhythm, I heard the production of the record, and I heard the singer's voice. And if I liked what I was hearing enough, then I would kind of dig in over time to find out what all the words really were. I remember when we were in high school, nobody really knew the words to a lot of the songs, and kids would make up their own words. Sometimes they were wrong. And sometimes they were kind of raunchy. And sometimes they were better than the original words. This was back in the days of, this is before cassettes and 8-tracks. You used to have to buy the 45 and then put it on a turntable and lift up the needle and go back to the beginning to see, make sure you got all the words right. But that particular process kind of programmed me to think in terms of sound rather than poetry. Now, writing the music first and writing the words second is kind of a backwards way of songwriting. Traditional songwriting is, I'll give you an example, when the Star Spangled Banner was written back during the War of 1812, Francis Scott Key wrote a poem. And he said, "Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed the twilight's last gleaming?" And he set those lyrics to an old English drinking song. So there was already music that he was thinking of before he wrote the words. That's a traditional way to write a song. You set words to music. And I've set music to words. I write the music first, and then I try to figure out, all right, what is inherent in that music? What's the mood? What's the feeling that I get? What's the emotion that is inherent in that music? I do that with classical music, too. If I listen to symphonic music and instrumental music that has no words, I get a sense of what the composer was trying to convey, even without lyrics. Beethoven was somebody who could do that. Chopin was someone who could do that. Rachmaninoff was someone who could do it. There is an inherent message in the music, and I don't mean a political message necessarily. I just mean an emotion, a feeling, a mood, something the composer wants to convey, which is why they take all the trouble to write, you know, all the parts for everything. They want to convey what they're feeling, what they're trying to communicate without words. So to me, that's very, very important. So I had the music for the song Miami 2017 in my head. Da 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 da. And there was a melody. I didn't know what it was going to be about. And sometimes it takes me a while to figure out, what did I mean? What did I want to say? What's the code? why did I write that? And I was living in Los Angeles at the time I wrote the song. This was in the early 70s. I'd say 74.
It was released in 76.
It was released on the Turnstiles album that came out in 76. And I was living in L.A., and I think it was 1975, and New York was having a financial crisis at the time. New York was in pretty bad shape. The city was dirty. There were strikes all over the place. There was a lot of crime, Son of Sam time.
The famous Ford, President Ford to New York, when they said New York was going bankrupt, and the headline was Ford to New York Drop Dead.
Yes, and that was that exact headline is what motivated me to write the lyric. I was living in L.A., and it was national news when New York applied to the federal government for federal aid, and they turned them down. And the headline said, Ford to New York, drop dead. Now, I was living in L.A. at the time. I lived there for 3 years. And a lot of people in L.A. who were kind of anti-New York, and most of them were ex-New Yorkers, who had bitter feelings about New York because things didn't work out for them, so they moved out to the West Coast. But I was a New Yorker who never intended to stay in L.A. I just went out there for a few years to get some business stuff straightened out. But as soon as I saw that headline, I said, wait a minute. You know, if New York's going down the tubes, I'm going to go down with it. And I moved back right after all of this happened. 1975, I moved back to New York. And I just had this vision of, well, if the federal government lets New York go down the tubes, what's going to happen to the city? And I just had these apocalyptic visions of buildings burning and skyscrapers collapsing and people fleeing the city, and just this hellish vision of an apocalyptic New York. And I said, I guess this is what you would call a science fiction song. This is what might happen. And I started to write. I've seen the lights go out on Broadway. I saw the Empire State laid low. And that's basically what motivated all the lyrics to that song.
So before we get to the lyrics, I'm going to do it in your sequence. I want to do a little bit of deep dive into the music in the song. It begins, obviously, with the sound effects, sort of, as you said, science fiction-y.
I wanted a sound of a siren that was kind of bone-chilling. You remember, you know, those, This Is London. Edward R. Murrow used to broadcast from London, and you would hear sirens, you know, like go to the air raid shelters. Kind of bone-chilling siren. Every time I hear something like that, my hair stands up on my arms. It's kind of scary sounding. It's like, okay, head to the shelters because, you know, all hell's going to break loose here. So I wanted to start the song with that. That was done with the synthesizer.
Okay, so out of that bone-chilling sound effect comes this very delicate, sort of Baroque, maybe Scarlatti-ish, Bach-ish piano solo. What's the derivation of that, which, of course, bookends the song? You have it at the end again.
Well, the chord progression on that particular piano part at the beginning of the song is actually the end of the verse. It's the last musical coda of the verse, where it says, they turned our power down, they drove us underground, and we went right on with the show. But that's what that chord progression is. But I did it in an arpeggiated way to kind of signal, this is what you're going to start to hear. I didn't want to give it away. I just wanted to do it, you know, very lightly, very faintly. Like, what's that about? What's going on? What's about to happen?
And out of that, you have no clue, really. There's no hint. You give no hint to the listener that you're going to have this very powerful, what you once described to me as a great stadium song. Big, hard guitars, big drums coming out of that, which creates the power that the song has. So you have this beginning, which is so delicate, going into a really powerful thing. And you use the lyric in there to bridge you, correct?
Yeah. The song begins pretty simply with piano and vocal. I've seen the lights go out on bridge. Just this simple declarative statement. The instruments aren't all in yet, so it's sort of a prelude or an overture to what's about to unfold. You don't really get the rhythm of the song until the end of that verse when the band kicks in, and then all of a sudden it takes on a whole other kind of, you know, rocking rhythm. But we went right on with the show. It's kind of a difficult rhythm pattern for the rhythm section to get at first because it's sort of backwards. The rhythm pattern is da 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 ba ba da ba ba da ba ba da ba. It's like a dotted chord. Da 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 ba. Like something Keith Richards is great at. He plays these riffs. What's that song? Da 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 da. Then start me up. He's great at coming up with riffs. And when I first played it for the band, I played it on the piano. Da 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 da. 3 4 da 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 da. 2 3. That rhythm. But the drummer thought it was da 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 da. Da 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 da. And he was playing it backwards. I said, No. It's syncopated. And it took a while for them to hit it. But then once they got the groove, they got it.
So to finish the musical side of it, you come out of the hard middle and you go back to the piano solo, sort of as a coda. You know, very much like the Pastoral Symphony ends softly. You sort of end this off drifting off.
Yeah, I was influenced a lot by classical music, and I like the symphonic form of things. The lyric is kind of read out as a parable. This is what happened. It's like a fable. That was then, and I remember that. And I wanted the last verse to echo that sense.
So now we turn to the lyrics, and I would be remiss if I didn't ask a couple of specific questions about the lyrics. The carrier picked the Yankees up. What was that about?
I had this vision of, you know, hordes of people needing to flee Manhattan Island. I don't know if a lot of people are aware, even people who live in the city. You live on an island. New York is an archipelago of islands, Manhattan Island, Staten Island, Long Island, Fire Island, Coney Island, Ellis Island, Roosevelt Island. It's all islands. It's an exploded archipelago. And if people have to evacuate, like what happened in 9/11, people had to get off the island. They had to either go by a bridge or a tunnel or a boat. And I just pictured, okay, well, they had to send a carrier, a gigantic military ship, to be able to take that many people off the island. And I had them picking the Yankees up. They sent the carrier out from Norfolk and picked the Yankees up for free. That's kind of a New York icon. We got to rescue the Yankees.
And then the other lyric I have to ask about is if the mafia took over Mexico. Strange line.
Well, let's see. That was before we all lived here in Florida, is the line before that, which is where a lot of New Yorkers end up living anyway. They get to their golden years. They move down to the Sun Belt in places like Miami, and that's where their retirement is. Before we all lived here in Florida. Before the mafia took over Mexico. It just seemed like only a matter of time before that was going to happen anyway.
Okay.
And in a lot of ways, a lot of, you know, the drug families, the crime lords, are, you know, kind of taking over in Mexico.
So the title. I mean, a lot of people know the song is I've Seen the Lights Go Out on Broadway, which I guess is the subtitle, actually.
Yes.
But the actual title is Miami 2017. You said you wrote this in around 1974, 75. It was released in 76. So the song is more than 40 years old at this point.
Well, I wanted to set the time and place for when the song was written. And I thought, okay, this would probably be happening in the year 2017. Seemed like far enough into the future to justify me calling it a science fiction song. And I wanted the perception to be that he's an old man. He's living down in Florida now, and he's telling his grandchildren the story of what happened in New York City. So hence the title, Miami 2017. Some people didn't even realize I was talking about the year 2017. People would refer to it as, what's that song, Miami 2017? What does that mean? Is it a spaceship, or what are you talking about? And I said, no, it's Miami in the year 2017. I think we're now deep enough into this century to start referring to years instead of 2000 that we say 20, which is really the way I wanted it to be spoken, was Miami 2017. Although nowhere in the lyric of the whole song does anything say Miami 2017.
So how does it feel from a standpoint of a song? I mean, it is one of your many songs that people know well today, 40 plus years after you wrote it.
These are songs that people know not from hearing them extensively played on the radio. They didn't get a lot of radio play. Back in the day, FM radio would play album tracks, which was a great time for songwriters because a lot of their stuff got heard that never gets heard anymore. So that was called an album cut, and certain selected FM stations would play the songs they liked. But the song was really never given a lot of wide exposure until 9/11. And after 9/11, it got a lot more airplay. It got a lot more attention. It got media attention. Almost they were talking about me writing that song as if it was a prophet or something. And I would be asked a lot, well, what does it feel like to have written prophecy? I said, well, I didn't really think that would ever happen. And the incredible thing was, in a way, it did at 9/11. The buildings came down, the fire and the panic and the evacuation of Manhattan. So it actually did happen. I'm not saying I'm Nostradamus. I was just writing a science fiction song. And then it also got more attention after Hurricane Sandy. There was kind of another apocalyptic situation in New York where people had to evacuate.
Did you ever feel the connection between the song and 9-11? I remember you played it at the concert for 9-11.
Well, I thought it was an appropriate song to play at that point. A disaster happened, a catastrophe happened, a tragedy unfolded in New York. And that song pretty much reflected, you know, what people were feeling at the time.
I know you once said to me that your favorite song is the one you played last or the one you wrote last.
Yeah.
Where do you, in terms, if you looked at the songs you perform fairly regularly, is this one you look forward to performing? I know there's some that are easier to perform than others. Is this one, when you do it, you say, yeah, it's a good song?
It's a good song to do live. It feels good to play it on stage because it has a lot of dynamic in it. It starts out, you know, sort of dramatic, very slow, and kind of delicate, and then it just bangs into this rock and feel for a while, and then it diminishes at the end, sort of in an operatic way. It ends with a whimper, not a bang, and I kind of like that. I like that it encapsulates a whole lot of different rhythms and a whole lot of, you know, different moods in a very short amount of time.
Billy, it's always great to talk to you. Billy Joel, Miami 2017, one of the great songs. Good to talk to you. Always a pleasure. Talk to you soon.
All right, thanks a lot.
Billy Joel was talking to WCRB's Tony Rudell, taking us into 2017 with Miami 2017. You can subscribe to The Answered Question at iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And you'll also find TAQ at WCRB's Facebook, Twitter, and SoundCloud pages. Thank you so much to Billy Joel and to Tony Rudell, as well as to my colleagues Alan McClellan and audio engineer Antonio Oliart-Ross. I'm Brian McCreath. Happy 2017, and thanks for listening.